everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week and unfortunately another tough pill to swallow as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 83. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Greg Cosell from NFL Films as we take a close look at the Eagles' loss to the Green Bay Packers and what both Greg and I saw from the tape on both sides of the ball. Before we look ahead to next week's matchup against those Bengals out in Cincinnati, next up, we've got Scouting Report, where I want to talk about a player that's really been thrown into the spotlight due to an injury for the Bengals, and he's now a player that the Eagles must keep under wraps next weekend. So we've got a ton to get into. Let's not waste any time. Greg and I talk Eagles-Packers before we get into everything you need to know about Sunday's matchup against the Bengals. Let's get to that chat now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me once again here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell. Greg, long time no see. It's been about, 18 hours since I last saw you here at the NovaCare Complex as we watched the Eagles fall to the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football, 27-13. It was a tough game to get through watching it live, and obviously when you take into account as well what this means for the Eagles moving forward, the rest of the season is basically a series of must-win games for this team. What is your initial reaction after not just seeing it live, but then going through the tape Tuesday morning?
Well, another game where I thought that they were clearly in the game. They were certainly not overmatched. Now, granted, Green Bay was 4-6 coming in, so it wasn't as if they were playing one of the teams with the best record in the league, but I thought particularly watching the defensive side of the ball, and I've watched probably every Aaron Rodgers game that he's played. I thought within the last year or so, I thought this was one of the best games that Aaron Rodgers played. And because Aaron Rodgers over the last year has developed into a quarterback that is random and dangerous, but not precise and surgical.
Sure.
And he used to be precise and surgical. Last night he was precise and surgical.
Well, it's funny because it's not really funny, but we talked about it right here in these same exact seats a week ago about the struggles that he was having and what we were seeing from him on tape and, talking with guys around here, even in Eagles Network in the department that don't get a chance to watch tape. And they're like, what do you see when you watch Green Bay? And I say, Rodgers has kind of struggled this year. He hasn't looked the same. He hasn't been the same guy. Outside of that Detroit game in Week 3, it's the only other game this year.
The first half of that Detroit game, he was really good.
Yeah, that's the only other game this year where I can remember seeing him operate that efficiently. And then he goes out and he has that game last night, and everybody comes back from the stadium and looks at me and they're like, how about that Aaron Rodgers? And I'm like, what? I mean, well, it is what it is. But
it's really interesting about Rodgers, and clearly they put the game in his hands at the line of scrimmage because he was making a lot of the calls himself.
Yep.
So you have to give him a ton of credit. Most of the throws were short, quick throws. It was all quick game and rhythm throws. Now, I've seen him this year, and we talked about this last week, where throws are there, they're defined, and he didn't throw it. And last night,
He threw it.
And it was a really good performance. See, the thing is, you have to think of it this way. And this is what makes the Tom Brady's so, so great. And Aaron Rodgers is arguably the most talented quarterback in the NFL. That's not really in question. But it's how you help your team. See, when Rodgers plays randomly, yes, he's very dangerous. But his defense is not very good. So it's incumbent upon him to help the defense. And with that, what that means is, in a sense, doing what he did last night, throwing 6-yard completions, throwing 8-yard completions. It's incumbent upon him to complete those balls. And he wasn't doing that for much of this year, and it was easy to rip the defense, which obviously wasn't playing very well. We know that. And they didn't have a true run game. And their run game wasn't very good last night either. But it then became incumbent upon him to help the defense by sustaining offense. He wasn't doing that, yeah. And he did that last night.
Which certainly was the case, as you mentioned last night, limiting the Eagles' offense to 7 drives.
Yep.
Only possessing the ball 7 times certainly prevented the Eagles' offense from getting into a rhythm. But staying defensively, when you look at the Eagles' defensive front, and that's the question a lot of people have right now, and everyone's kind of up in arms about, you know, Fletcher Cox and Vinnie Curry, and where is the defensive line gone? This was supposed to be the strength of the team. What's going on? That's all people are talking about on Twitter and on Facebook and everywhere around the city. What do you see when you watch? Namely, let's start with Fletcher Cox. When you watch Fletcher Cox, people want to know, has his play fallen off? He got paid, now he's not. The numbers aren't there. What do you see when you watch Fletcher?
Well, I'll tell you what I saw last night, and I don't know whether you agree. I thought Fletcher Cox played really well last night.
I would agree.
100%. He played really well. The problem was when there's quick game and Rodgers with a lot of one-step throws, it doesn't matter. He was winning. In fact, he gave the rookie right guard, Jason Spriggs, a lesson last night on a number of snaps, but it didn't matter because the ball was out.
Greg, I know you guys sometimes pull these numbers, and I couldn't find them today. I would venture to guess that when you look at the Eagles' schedule over the last few weeks, and you look at players like Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan, Eli Manning, and Aaron Rodgers, and what he did last night, I would say that's 4 quarterbacks that are pretty high up on the list of getting the ball out quickly.
Right.
How much would that – and you talked about how that impacted last night, but over the long haul, seeing that over the last month – that's got to impact the numbers that you're going to see from a defensive line,
well,
from a production standpoint.
See, and then what you have to do defensively, and then I'll get back to some of the other guys on the D-line, but then what you have to do defensively is disrupt routes. See, the pass defense is obviously a combination of a lot of things. And if you're going to play teams that are built on quick game, Giants, Packers, basically they run very similar concepts,
yep, right,
because McAdoo came from Green Bay. So when those offenses are functioning at peak efficiency, and Rodgers functioned at peak efficiency last night, and I didn't chart the number of throws, but I would say that 80-85% of his throws were either quick game or quick 5-step ball out.
Or, yeah, right. Exactly.
Where pass rush pressure becomes irrelevant.
Yeah.
Then you have to do things coverage-wise to try to disrupt the timing of the quick game throws, because the D-line is not going to get there. But I think there's 2 players that I think who've played a good number of snaps this year that have probably not given Jim Schwartz what he would have hoped for, and that's Connor Barwin and Vinnie Curry. And I think Curry was clearly seen, and I think you and I probably felt that he would be a guy in this new system, wide 9, maybe a D-tackle as well, who could really rush the quarterback in the context of this 4-3 system. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't worked out. So Curry and Barwin really, I think, have been 2 guys who've not really been able to make a mark in this 4-3.
And when it's really apparent is when you're watching and you see Fletcher Cox, they're sliding protection that way. So what you'll see when you say slide protection, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when Big V was first inserted into the lineup and what are the different ways they can help a rookie right tackle. What you'll see is you'll slide the protection that way. So the center will slide in the direction of Fletcher Cox. And in essence, you've got, in certain occasions, a double team,
right, right,
on Fletcher Cox. But then at times last night, not only did they slide protection, but you also had a back chipping on Fletcher Cox.
Yeah.
So there were times where on the screen you could see 3 offensive players blocking or attempting to block Fletcher Cox, which created 3 one-on-one matchups across the defensive line that the Eagles were unable to capitalize on. Now, also helped by the fact that Rodgers, like you said, was getting the ball out quickly. So really just not a bad
No, it's funny. I put on the tape this morning, you know, and again, knowing what Rodgers did watching the game, although I saw, obviously, when we watched last night, I saw all the quick game throws, so I intuitively knew that the D-line was not going to get there. But I didn't know what to expect watching the individual players, and I thought Fletcher Cox actually played very well.
By the time most of you listen to this, you will have seen my piece on Fletcher Cox and the Eagles' defensive performance. And I think the final number was 23 plays of Fletcher Cox for this breakdown. So kind of went into, I think he played 50-some snaps in the game, so I pulled roughly half of his snaps. It'll be an interesting read. If you haven't checked it out, it'll be on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the mobile app sometime late on Tuesday, on Wednesday. All right, let's get to the rest of the defense now. The secondary, you know, it wasn't a great game from, obviously, Aaron Rodgers being able to get the ball out quickly What did you see from them early, and then how did it progress throughout the afternoon or throughout the evening?
Well, I think they struggled last night. They struggled on the outside. McKelvin has continued to struggle. You know, again, the few times he was in press, the first touchdown he was in press, he got beat badly off the ball. He's had a hard last, what, 4 or 5 weeks. Whether it's still a function of being injured, I can't answer that. They tell you in the NFL, if you're out on the field, it doesn't matter. You've got to perform. So he struggled. I think Jalen Mills always competes, but, you know, he had a couple of bad snaps as well. Even Nolan Carroll. It was just, I didn't think at the corner position that last night was their best game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then when we look over to the offensive side of the football, you talk about Carson Wentz and what his performance looked like playing opposite of Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, they're not facing off against each other, but getting a chance to see them both kind of go back and forth last night and then watching the tape back this morning, what were your thoughts on watching Carson against the Packers?
Thought he played well. Obviously, because every play and every possession was at a premium because of what the Packers were able to do offensively, that puts a tremendous burden on a young quarterback without a lot of weapons. And obviously when he threw the pick on the first possession of the third quarter where, you know, I couldn't tell whether he couldn't follow through, but the ball sailed on him.
Yeah.
And almost all his interceptions this year have been high.
Whether he couldn't step into it or whether he just didn't step into
right.
it, he didn't step into it.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And
Barber got kind of beat late, and it was tough to tell.
Yep.
Other than that, you know, which obviously was – I didn't have a problem with where he threw the ball because they actually went with a cover two trap to the other side of the field, and I think he could have taken – I think it was Ertz who was the intended target. He could have probably taken him a little bit more across the field – away from Clinton Dix, but it was just a high throw, so it was a bad throw. But I actually thought he played well. They let him run some no huddle, and he did so with a revamped O-line with different receivers. So I thought overall he played a pretty strong game. Now, the argument we've heard, of course, is they needed to keep running the ball and run the ball more. You know, then you get into individual play. That's always an after-the-fact thing. Could they have run the ball more? Probably, but I think what happens in a game like that where you feel the possessions slipping away and is you start to feel like you have to score, that you're just not going to have a lot of possessions. I mean, look, the Packers, got, not that the Eagles were going to win, it was 24-13 at the time, but the Packers got the ball with, what, about 10 and a half minutes to go, and you certainly assume that the Eagles would at least get another meaningful possession. And they didn't.
Sure, yeah.
I think their O-line did a good job in the run game. I thought Sam Alu at right guard actually looked very good in the run game for the most part.
I was impressed with Isaac in his first start.
Yeah, and he moved well. I thought when he got out in space, I was kind of surprised at his movement. He looked like a natural mover. So, you know, they ran the ball well. But you just start to get that feeling that the possessions are slipping away.
Yeah, in a game like that, and especially – I think the numbers also got thrown off because you had a number of those run-pass option plays. I counted 6 total. Carson threw the ball on 4 of them. He handed them off on handed the ball off on 2. That could have easily gone the other way, and you're swaying the run-pass
right,
totals
right.
that way as well. And then you had 3 drives, 2 to end the game, and then 1 at the end of the first half where they're trying to move the ball and score,
right,
and they're
right.
trying, so they're going to throw the football. So it's whenever you get into that the run-pass ratio, it's always kind of interesting, and that's why I went back and charted that early on Tuesday. But really interesting. I would agree with you. I thought Carson had a strong performance overall, especially considering, and we were saying this today, in the beginning, first week of August, you know, early training camp, if you had said that the Eagles were going to be hosting the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football, for all intents and purposes, a must-win situation, and Carson Wentz was going to be your starting quarterback, dropping back behind a third-string right tackle, another backup left guard, a backup right guard, throwing to Bryce Treggs, Dorial Green-Beckham, and Paul Turner, you would say, man, this is pretty crazy right now. And, you know,
right.
for all intents and purposes, he looked pretty good.
No, and look, he's a very talented kid. You know, the reality is that they just lack – I mean, as you look ahead to this team, and we'll get to Cincinnati in a minute, but they're going to have to address the receiver position. And on defense, I think they'll address the corner position. They need kind of explosive players on the perimeter. You know, again, the NFL game, you can win a lot of ways in this league. You can win running the ball, but for the most part in this league, if you don't have any explosive players on the perimeter on both sides of the ball, it's going to be tough.
It was good to see Dorial Green-Beckham be a factor, especially, you know, you had the injury to Jordan Matthews early in the game, and he was kind of in and out from that point on. But to see Dorial Green-Beckham catch four passes in the opening drive,
yep.
I think he only caught two more the rest of the game. But good to see him kind of come through and have a strong game.
Yeah, and he's someone, these next five games, I think, are really important for Dorial Green-Beckham. Again, I'm not making any comment about next year, who knows.
Right.
But he's going to get a lot of snaps. And he has an opportunity now, and I think they're going to throw. Look, they'll run the ball, but it's a pretty balanced offense. They'll throw it, and I think Green Beckham, depending, of course, on Jordan Matthews. My guess is Matthews. I don't know what the consent, you know, what the issue is, but he'll be back, I would imagine. Dorial Green Beckham's going to get snaps, and he's going to get targets.
Yeah, and you mentioned Sam Alu in his first start. I was very impressed with how Isaac looked in his opening start, not just in the run game. You mentioned his movement as well. I was really impressed also by just his eyes, you know, whether it was the stunts or the blitzes from Dom Capers, you know, seeing extra rushers coming from the second, third level. You saw him be able to pick those rushers up, whereas a rookie in his first start playing inside, not always able to make those kinds of adjustments. So that was certainly good to see as well. Let's transition now to this weekend where the Eagles take on a Cincinnati Bengals defense. We'll start with that matchup, the Eagles offense against Cincinnati's defense. And I'll tell you what, going into the week, last week, preparing for Cincinnati, I said, all right, you got Marvin Lewis, Paul Gunther's there. He's been under Mike Zimmer. I'm expecting pressure, a lot of different blitz looks and different looks on the back end.
You'd be wrong.
I was wrong. give us a quick scouting report of the Cincinnati pressure scheme.
Well, it's amazing to me, you know, because I know Paul and given his background with Mike Zimmer, but this team blitzes the fewest of any team in the NFL on quarterback dropbacks. And it's a team that coverage-wise is not that multiple. They predominantly play out of what we call split safety with two deep safeties. So it's cover two, it's quarters, it's quarter-quarter half. The occasional single high, as every team does. But it's mostly split safety, and they don't blitz a lot, so you're going to get a four-man rush. Now, you still have to be careful every once in a while. Paul, when Mike Zimmer was there, actually put together their blitz packages, so he can come up with some blitzes at times, and you have to be careful because it's selective, but you don't want to be surprised by them and then have it derail a drive. Where one area where I think that is the Eagles need to attack, Fran, and you can attack it in any number of ways with different personnel packages, different people, different route concepts, is the Bengals linebackers. They have, quite frankly, struggled in coverage, and they're really looking for people who can play in coverage. They've used a lot of different combinations in their sub-packages. They're a nickel team for the most part, and they're really looking for people in coverage at the linebacker position. Carlos Dansby, who I've loved as a player, seems like he's gotten old this year right before our eyes. We know Ray Maluga is not a coverage player. Perfect is a physical in-the-box player, not a real good coverage player. Vincent Ray might be their best coverage linebacker, but that's an area you have to attack.
Yeah, no question about it. And you mentioned they are a big nickel team. 67% of the snaps that I charted, so two-thirds of the time in nickel from what I've seen. Big zone coverage team
as well. Big zone coverage team.
You would imagine mainly because of the issues they've got at linebacker. And it's not like the safeties they have are great cover safeties in man-to-man situations either. So even though they spent a lot of draft assets on the cornerback position,
yeah.
I think in the middle of the field, I would agree, that's an area where you can try to attack, whether it's with your running backs, your slot receivers, your tight ends. Perfect has given up plays in coverage, as well as all the other linebackers and those safeties in the middle of the field. So that will be an interesting matchup. When you talk about this pass rush, you know, they certainly have a type in what they look for at defensive end. You know, you've got Carlos Dunlap, Michael Johnson, Will Clark, Marcus
all
Hunt.
All tall,
long, lean.
Yep.
Not basketball for all the two starters. Dunlap and Johnson certainly kind of have that basketball frame in their movement, their ability to get into opposing blockers' pads. But still not very high up on the list. They're 24th in the NFL right now with 21 sacks. Really just lack a consistent pass rush. Aren't committed to the blitz like you mentioned. What have you seen from those two players? And they it still is almost, though, it's almost like talking about Aaron Rodgers where, they don't have the consistent pass rush. You don't consistently see that from them this season. But you're watching a guy like Dunlap move, you think at any point this guy can go for 3.5 sacks.
He's been one of the most intriguing and frustrating players for me to watch over the years as I've watched tape of him as he's developed in the NFL, because body type, length, movement, he is at the top of the charts. He is really long. He's athletic. He has a great body. You just look at him and figure this guy should be a 15 to 18 sack guy every single season. And every once in a while, he looks the part. And he just dominates, and you go, wow. But he doesn't do that enough. And I think he's been a guy that in many ways has kind of hurt this defense, because he's the one guy they really count on as a pass rusher. Because Johnson, even coming out of Georgia Tech, he was kind of an interesting player because of his size, his length, his movement, pretty athletic guy. But he was never really a big-time pass rusher. And I don't think anybody saw him. I don't know. Do you remember him coming out?
I do.
Yeah. I don't think anybody saw him as a big sack guy. Yeah. He was a little different kind of player.
Yeah, no question about it. And then they still have Geno Atkins inside.
Now, he's tough.
Yeah.
He's tough. And you know, I don't know who's going to play guard this week, depending, you know, obviously Brooks was sick, assuming it's nothing serious. I assume he's back starting guard.
It sounds like he'll be back.
You know, but Atkins is one of those leverage players. He's short, looks a little stumpy, but has tremendous quickness and explosion inside.
Let's look at the secondary. You mentioned primarily zone coverage, primarily split safety looks. So when we say that, we're talking cover two, Tampa two, quarters coverage with four deep defenders, some combination coverages, and, you know, quarter half, and playing it to different sides of the field. So a lot of split safety looks in the back end, primarily zone. Really don't see a lot of man until you get to third down with this team. What is the key, number one, before we get into the personnel, to attacking a team that's primarily zone coverage?
It's route concepts, because every zone has holes, or everybody would play the same zone. So every zone has voids. So now it's protection and route concepts, because you want to be able to have combination concepts, whether it's three-level stretch, whether it's dagger, which we see the Eagles run all the time. There's different concepts that break down zone, and you need to protect, and that's absolutely critical. But I think this is a game where, in all honesty, and I'm not going to – I don't predict – but I think this is a game where the Eagles should be able to throw, and where they should be somewhat proactive throwing, because it's not a matter of not having great receivers. You don't need great receivers against zone. The concepts can take care of it.
And really the big key when it comes to that is they had opportunities to go downfield this past week. I'm sure you saw it on tape. They called 4, 5, 6, 7 shot plays. For one reason or another, you know, mostly because they couldn't protect well. And
right.
Pressure did get to Wentz and kind of force him from the pocket. But you want to be able to capitalize on those opportunities down the field.
And I think at some point you have to. It's just too hard in this league. And I think the Eagles at times have done a very good job with sustaining offense and having long drives. But that's just too hard. You have to try to create. And this is a defense where you can. I mean, there are going to be opportunities in this game.
So real quickly, before we shift over to the Bengals offense, in the secondary, you've got George Aloka, the strong safety who plays a little bit deep, a little bit close to the line of scrimmage, but mostly deep in the back half. Big, long safety, really interesting body type for the position. And then Drake Kirkpatrick, who was a former first-round pick out of Alabama. A lot of people kind of viewed him as a bust over the last couple of years. Has turned into a nice player.
Yeah, good player. He's long, too. He moves well. You know, he got drafted. I think when he was drafted, it was about 26th or 27th in the first round. I think there was a sense that he wasn't ready. Now, it probably took a little longer than people like the Bengals were hoping.
Right.
But he's kind of developed into that long, rangy corner. I actually think he can play man, too. They just don't play a ton of man. But he's a good player. Adam Jones is still a solid player on the other side. I think they've struggled in the slot a little bit. We'll see who goes in there this week. I know last week, due to injury at safety, Josh Shaw, who had been their slot corner, had to play safety. So we'll see, you know, what happens this week. The guy that's been a little bit of I never use the word bust, but it's clearly been a disappointment for them, is Darquez Dennard, who was a first-round pick out of Michigan State, and he really does not get on the field very much. He played last week due to injury, but when everybody's healthy, he doesn't get many snaps.
Yeah, that certainly has been the case, and I know he struggled early in the slot this past week against the Baltimore Ravens. You mentioned injuries in the secondary. You can't talk about injuries to this team without looking at that offense, and really just a unit that has been just ravaged over the last couple of weeks. mainly to their two biggest playmakers. You know, A.J. Green goes down with his injury, his leg injury, and then you lose Giovanni Bernard as well for the entire season. Now you have a team without two of their most explosive weapons on the offensive side of the football, trying to find ways to manufacture yards on the ground and through the air.
Yeah, and that's an issue for them right now. And another big problem for them this year has been they've not protected as well, because Andy Dalton's been sacked well more times already this season than he was a year ago.
32 sacks allowed, 29th in the league right now.
Yeah, and I think last year might have been 20 or 21 all
yeah.
season.
Yep.
So that's been an issue. So, you know, they're really an offense now. From a run game standpoint, they try to run every week with Jeremy Hill. Counter is a big run for them. That's something the Eagles will have to defend. It's a critical run. You don't want to let Jeremy Hill get going. He really hasn't in any game this year. The games he's had some yards, he's had a couple of big runs, but they really haven't sustained offense with the run game. And then in the pass game, you know, there's a couple of things you have to defend. You're going to have to defend some gimmick looks, because they have to try to create, and this is a team that's done that all throughout the year.
Yep.
They hit Tyler Eifert for 71 yards. I think it was the second or third play of the game against the Giants, where they lined up in one of those gimmick formations, and normally they shift into a more conventional formation, but they didn't on this play, and Eifert ran down the hole against a linebacker for 71 yards. So you have to, the Eagles have to prepare for that, because you can't get burned by that.
Yeah, no question.
But really, Tyler Eifert, he's a guy you must defend, because he's a very big, fast tight end. Tyler Boyd's a nice rookie receiver, mostly a slot guy, not really a big play guy, more of a chain mover type.
Yeah, and he certainly has made a lot of plays in the middle of the field. They've started to use him a little bit down the seam as well, vertically. He had a couple catches against New England Patriots in that facet of the game. And Brandon LaFell is a nice, solid possession receiver as well.
Yep. Yeah, he's a pro. But they just don't have explosiveness in the pass game. That's what's killing them.
Overall feeling, this will be the last question on the way out. Overall feeling on Andy Dalton at this stage of his career?
I don't think he's had a really good season, and I know you can talk about more pressure on him. I just don't feel he's been as consistent. To me, Andy Dalton, at his core, is an orchestrator. He's a distributor. He's an orchestrator and a distributor. You know, to use the overworked term, he's a point guard. I think at his best, he's a real solid NFL quarterback. I mean, I would argue that Andy Dalton and Kirk Cousins are ultimately similar style players, that if they have weapons, they'll distribute the ball really, really effectively and play well. Right now, he doesn't have a lot of weapons, and I think he suffers because he's not going to make those kinds of throws that we talk about and say, wow, those are big-time throws.
Well, Greg, very much looking forward to catching this entire game with you Sunday afternoon here at the NovaCare Complex. Until then, we will see you soon here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rant.
Great stuff from Greg. Again, you can follow him on Twitter just like I do, at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know I greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on social media. That is one way to support the show. But the other is to go on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen, and you give us a rating, leave us a comment. I wanted to give a shout-out to Dave Nagel, who left a comment on our Libsyn page saying how much he loves the podcast, how it's all football, no nonsense, and how much he learns each week, which I appreciate very much. So thanks to Dave and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. All right, let's keep this show going. I told you earlier, I wanted to profile a player that has really seen his role increased mightily in the last couple of weeks for this Bengals offense. Time to reveal who that is in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
If you listen to this podcast, or if you listened closely to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA in the offseason, you probably have some kind of an idea of who I want to talk about on this Bengals team, and that's rookie wide receiver Tyler Boyd. 6'1 and a half, 197 pounds, was their second round pick this past year. He started 33 games for the last 3 years for Pitt, was a two-time first-team all-conference player, and I was really, really high on Tyler Boyd. He was my favorite overall receiver in this draft class, ahead of guys like Josh Doctson, Corey Coleman, Laquon Treadwell. All those guys were first-round picks. I liked Boyd as an overall player more than all three, and you'd be hard-pressed to find someone that liked him more than I did this offseason coming out of Pitt. Now, When I watched Boyd on tape, he lined up mostly as the X receiver, but he did go into the slot. He lined up at Z. He took carries out of the backfield as a running back. He was a wildcat at times in 2015. They had a lot of injuries on that offensive side of the football, so he was really the focal point of everything that they wanted to do offensively. Now, he worked a lot of different releases at the line of scrimmage, showed the ability to beat press coverage early in the down, and I thought he was an above-average athlete for the position, showed the quickness, the burst, the change of direction to be effective against NFL corners. I thought he showed the speed to get vertical and work downfield, and he showed an extra gear when the ball was in his hands. He was used to doing work over the middle, something I definitely have seen on tape here with Cincinnati, and he's not afraid to take a hit. He ran a pro-style route tree in college and was overall a solid route runner. Showed the ability to separate at the top of his stem, does a good job creating space by leaning one direction and breaking opposite, used his burst to stick his foot in the ground and pull away from defenders in the open field, used things like head bobs and shoulder fakes and changed up his stride length and did lots of different things, a lot of savvy moves to create separation from defenders at the second and third level. I thought his ball skills were excellent, and that was really the strength of his game. Playing the ball very well in the air, climb the ladder, adjust his body to make catches over defenders, was one of the best one-on-one contested players in this draft. I thought he had a really great my ball mentality, was really greedy, attacking the football in the air and snatching it, pulling it away back into his body, had great hands, just an easy catcher, maximizes his catch radius consistently. And despite the fact that he had such a high volume of targets, I only charged him for 4 unforced drops all season long to go with a couple double catches and a couple drops where he was hit and the ball came out. Really physical after the catch as well, and was good in the screen game for the Panthers. Now, wasn't perfect. Obviously, did have a couple negatives on his game. You know, I thought that he had the ability to be a very good route runner, but I thought he could still improve. Was a little bit high at times going in out of his stem. Would telegraph his routes at times. I thought he could add weight, get a little bit stronger, which would make him even better at the catch point. I thought his blocking was up and down. And then when he went to the combine, a lot of people kind of knocked him because he didn't test great. But to me, the tape showed that he was a better athlete than those numbers out in Indianapolis. So Boyd, to me, was the best receiver in this draft class, surefire, quality starter at the next level. Would have loved for the Eagles to have a chance to get him, but obviously with the trade-up to draft Carson Wentz, Boyd was off the board by the time the Eagles would select in the third round. But I think he's got Pro Bowl potential, and still do. I think he has Pro Bowl potential down the road as a long-time NFL starter. So he is certainly, now with A.J. Green out of the lineup, like Greg mentioned earlier, you've got Brandon LaFell, you've got Tyler Eifert, and you've got Tyler Boyd. And I think Boyd has the ability to develop into a quality starting receiver on the outside. He's learning from a really savvy route runner in Brandon LaFell. Knows that he's got the ability to go up and win at the catch point, much like an A.J. Green. So he's got a couple really good mentors there for him to grow and develop. And certainly a player, like I said, that the Eagles will have to worry about on Sunday afternoon. All right, let's wrap it up. Great stuff from Greg Cosell and all of you out there listening, whether you're on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and, of course, on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And, again, if you get the time, go on, rate the show, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Leave a question, because I love answering the specific questions you guys leave on those pages, and I will get in-depth here on the podcast on those topics. So just go on, leave us a comment, and we'll talk about whatever you have to say on this show. So all that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week. Thank you. And if you get the time, again, rate the show, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Don't be afraid to leave us a question on there, too, because I'd love the ability to answer it here on the podcast. If there's ever anything specific you want me to hit on in depth, I will absolutely take requests from all of you out there. So, again, wherever you listen, just go shoot us a comment wherever you listen to the show. All right. That being said, that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.